This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And now we're going to talk a little bit Michigan football and a little Michigan basketball with our good friend Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press. Let's bring in Mark. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How you doing, Earl?
Hey, doing great, and looking forward to this ball season. And Michigan is really doing well. Are you surprised at all? I'm a little bit surprised that they're doing so well. You know, ranked third in the nation. Are you surprised at all? Because you've been watching them a lot more than I have, of course.
Well, I think it's surprising just because you haven't seen them do it in so many years. I mean, it's been, you know, there's a whole generation of Michigan basketball fans who have never seen a dominant Michigan team. And, you know, now they're seeing it. I mean, number three in the country, they're deep. They can play big. They can play small. They can do any. They can shoot the ball as well as anyone in the country. I mean, they're a dominant team. And, you know, for those of us who, you know, watched the teams in the early 2000s, you know, it's amazing to see that this is the same program, the same uniforms, at least, I guess.
Yeah, they made a pretty quick – would you say it's a pretty quick turnaround under John Beilein?
Well, I think John Beilein has done a good thing. I mean, I think he built it steadily. And I think the first couple of years he kind of managed with what he had left over. You know, he had Manny Harris and Deshaun Sims were very talented. He kind of had to build around them and their talents. And now he's building the team that he wants to build, you know, with the kind of players he wants. And, you know, it's been better than they expected. I mean, they have these five, you know, they anticipated high goals, they had high goals. But adding these five guys as freshmen this year has been a surge that no one could have even anticipated, you know, on this level.
Yes, is a chance most of these guys are going to stick around for a while, or any chance that they might leave early?
Well, it just depends on how good they are. I mean, I think that, you know, none of them have shown, you know, really have been an elite enough players to necessarily have to leave after 1 year, but you never can predict what a guy is doing. I think the thing that might hold them back is because there's so much talent on this team, none of them are going to put up dominant numbers. I mean, Glenn Robinson can lead, or Nick Stauskas can lead them in scoring one game. Michigan McGarry is going to come around, but I think at this point, I don't think any one of them is going to star, because stars in this team are sophomore Trey Burke, who probably will leave after this year, and Tim Hardaway Jr., who's had a very good start to the season and can play at a high level too and could be an NBA player at some point.
Yeah, how good is Mitch McGarry? I hear a lot of talk about him being maybe even better than what a lot of people think he's going to be.
Well, I think that Mitch still has a lot of work to do. I think that, you know, he has to work on his footwork. He has to work on his physicality, and his stamina is getting better. But I don't think he's a dominant big man, but that's true of any big man. I don't think it's very rare that you see a freshman big man who's ready to come in and dominate. It just doesn't happen very often. I mean, Anthony Davis last year, you know, he's a special, unique kind of talent. Him, Kevin Love, those kind of guys. McGarry's a very good player, but I don't know that he's on that level yet. But he can develop into something very special. It's just a question of him taking the time and the kind of learning, especially within Beilein's offense, which hasn't relied on a big man of his size in years.
Yes, you think Beilein might have a trouble adjusting his offense so where a big man that has some skills can fit in? Because, as you say, we haven't seen a John Beilein offense work through a big man in a long, long time.
Well, I think that now that Beilein the last couple of years has gone to the pick and roll so heavily, I think the big man really plays a good role there. The problem is, and Beilein's pointed this out a couple of times, is that it requires a ton of running. You know, you have to set the pick, you have to move back, you run back and forth from the post up and down over and over again. So there's a lot of work and a lot of stamina required, and that's why, you know, it's good that Michigan has three post players. But McGarry's obviously the most talented one, and Jordan Morgan's been the most productive one. So I think they have to kind of find that balance. The one thing about this Michigan team is there's no ego at this point, and no one is putting it, you know, anything bigger than it needs to be. And I think that as long as that can stay, if they can stay through this whole year, they can really be special. If someone feels that, you know, that maybe they need their shots or they need their points or something like that, well, then it kind of will get out of hand and then it could be a big issue.
Yeah, now, we know Brady Hoke's done a very good job of building the Michigan team, the football team there, and they're going to face an awfully, awfully tough game against South Carolina in the Gator Bowl. How do you see that game going?
Well, I think it has more to do with what they can do in terms of the offense, Michigan's offense. South Carolina's defense is its trademark, you know. I know it's kind of weird for a Steve Spurrier team,
yes.
But you know, that's kind of the way this is. They're one of the best defenses in the country, and they have a crazy pass rush. They have Jadeveon Clowney, you know, who's probably the best defensive end in the country, certainly the most talented. And so that's kind of where Michigan has to win the game. They have to win the game with their offensive line, which has struggled. They have to score enough points, you know, to win. I don't think the South Carolina's offense is going to be crazy productive. It's just not the way that they play. It's more about, you know, Michigan being able to get its time and get its points enough to win the game.
How much do you think not having Marcus Lattimore out will hurt South Carolina? Because he was a big part of that offense.
He was, but, you know, that happened, a month ago. I mean, they've had more than enough time. They had a number of games, you know, games they won without him, and they learned to adapt their offense. I think having their quarterback, Connor Shaw, back is going to maybe be the biggest boost that they're going to get going into this game because they didn't have him, you know, at the end of the year, and they were still winning. So I think that's really where you're going to see a change and see an impact.
Okay. And Michigan is how do you see them developing and going back to Denard for quarterback, or will they stick with Gardner, you think?
I think Gardner will probably be quarterback just because you need to run and throw. And I saw against Ohio State in the second half, you know, Ohio State didn't respect the passing game. And that's why they couldn't put Denard in there. So now, Gardner is the one who can throw the ball, and then they're going to, I would assume, though I assume it gets Ohio State, they're going to use the Robinson in different places around the field, you know, catching the ball and running out of the backfield and in the slot situation and stuff like that. I mean, if they're smart, that would be the thing to do. And that's what we thought they were going to do against Ohio State. Didn't necessarily come to pass, but, you know, we'll see.
Yes, this Michigan are you surprised at how quickly that Brady Hoke has developed the Michigan team? In a couple of years, it's really developed fast under him.
No, I think that it's not a dominant program yet by any means. I mean, look at they couldn't beat they played all the elite teams this year. They played Alabama and got handled. They were close against Notre Dame, and they were close against Ohio State, but they couldn't pull off a win. You know, and you'll go look at their game against Nebraska. If Robinson's healthy, maybe they had an opportunity. But, you know, I think that's something that you got to finish those games. That's what a great team does. And they've proved that, you know, they're not a great team at this point. They could be. They could get there in the next couple of years, but they haven't been there now. And I think that's maybe some of the issues.
Yes. How's the recruiting been going? Is it still going? Because I've heard it's been going pretty well. Is it still going well?
It was going well at the beginning. I mean, they had the number one class last summer because they got so many talented commitments so early. But they haven't gotten a lot recently. So I think that's maybe the next situation. You know, I think they have to kind of work through that. And, you know, there's still, you know, a month and a half to go. But they're going to have a big visit weekend, I think, coming this weekend with a bunch of guys, and including David Dawson, who decommitted from Michigan, you know, from Cass Tech.
Yeah.
And then now he's going to take another visit back there from what I read. And I guess if they get him back in the fold as one of the best guards in the nation, that should help them out.
Yes. Now, how much, you know, when we talk about Michigan and their recruiting and people, they've been doing such a great job over the years. They've always had one of the strongest recruiters and strongest recruiting classes. Is that still continuing, or do they have to fight a little bit more fighting against Michigan State and Ohio State and Notre Dame? Or
I think they're fighting against Ohio State. I think that's good. Battling against, they seem to have controlled most of the people, you know, that they wanted in battles in Michigan State. But against Ohio State, they've gone back and forth, and so that's the challenge right now, is to try to figure that out. So.
Now, what about in Michigan basketball? We know they've been going well. They've been getting some very named players, some sons of very named players, and they've been doing quite well in basketball. And how is Beilein still recruiting guys to his system, because I always heard how John recruits guys to his system. He just doesn't recruit good or great players, but he recruits guys who he believes can play in his system.
Well, I think the guys he can play in his system, but, you know, character he values quite a bit, and I think that's one of the things, and that's paying off this year. So he's got a lot of talented kids, but they also, you know, are buying into the team concept. You know, they're good students for the most part, and that's something that's been a priority for him. I think that he's, you know, they're confining their recruiting to the Midwest. They go heavy in Northwest Indiana. This team's real heavy in terms of that area, and a little in Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, and that's kind of the area that they're targeting. You know, they really don't even have that many from the state of Michigan on this roster, but the Midwest is kind of what he's done, and I think he'll fit with that.
Yeah, it seems like him and Tom Izzo haven't bumped head too many times in recruiting, have they?
No, Beeline's more, he's been more of a projection kind of guy, and a number of the guys in the team, they've gotten in on early, they've gotten early commitments, and the guys have stuck with them, and I think that's an important approach. I think that Beeline sees that as maybe the way he can do it. Ben Robinson, when they got him, he was like a low three-star maybe, and, you know, his name was more important than anything else. And then now, you know, by the end, he was number 13 player in the country. Mitch McGarry was number 2 when they recruited him, and they got him. I mean, he didn't end up there, but he was still a top, you know, 30 player in the country. So I think that, you know, he's proven he can recruit, you know, elite players and develop and project other players that can get to that point.
How do you project this basketball team going and doing, because he's done a very good job about building the basketball team. So how do you project that going on from here?
Well, we don't really know. I mean, they've been great so far, but they haven't played elite teams. They haven't played even the caliber of competition yet. They just played in NC State, and they handled them fine. But, you know, we need to see when they get into the Big Ten play, and they're playing against all these elite teams regularly. You know, when they're playing Michigan State, and they're playing, you know, Indiana, Ohio State, and now Illinois looks good, and Minnesota. I mean, there's going to be a lot of talented teams in the Big Ten. We'll have to see if Michigan can actually prove itself against them. And if they do, you know, then we'll say maybe they're a Final Four contender. But at this point, I think it's hard to project that just based on the talent and the level of competition that they face.
Okay. Well, who's going to win the ball game?
Who's going to win the bowl game?
Yeah, who's going to win the bowl game between Michigan and South Carolina? Who you got?
I think you got to pick South Carolina until, you know that Michigan's going to prove otherwise. I think that Michigan's, the way they fell apart in the second half against Ohio State is really concerning, because you think that they have this weapon that we saw against Iowa with Bernard Robinson moving him around that could be explosive and put up points. But if we can't see that, you know, then that's a whole different circumstance. So, I mean, I don't know. I think I got to go with South Carolina and their defense until maybe Michigan proved me wrong, and maybe I'll change my mind as we get closer, but we'll see.
Okay. Hey, Mark, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We haven't talked together in a while, but we'll have to do it again to get talk a little bit more basketball later on, buddy.
I love it, Earl.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mark. Yeah, we'll talk to you later. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press talking Michigan basketball and Michigan football. Well, now let's talk Detroit Lions football with our good friend from the Detroit, former Detroit Lion offensive lineman, now ESPN commentator, analyst, Lomas Brown is with us to talk Detroit Lions football. Lomas, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Earl. How are you?
Okay, yeah. The Lions aren't doing that great. They've been a little disappointing. But let's talk about that, because we both saw that special on Barry Sanders. I thought it was very well done.
It really was, man. And to me, I'm glad he was able to get his side of the story out. I'm glad people were able to just to see Barry and, you know, I just know the real reason why he walked away from the game and, you know, just everything about him, how he was brought up. It was just a well-done piece, like you said, Earl, and it was just great. I'm glad NFL Films did what they did, because it was awesome.
Yes, it was, because Barry was a good man. And when he retired, I just knew so many people in our business, you know, they were upset that Barry retired, I kept telling him, I said, what did you want? You wanted him to get carried out on a sword like a lot of other players, just get carried out and just walk away being one of those wounded warriors and just be proud because the guy played hurt and all that stuff. I said, he played 10 years. He never had a significant injury. I said, he went out at the right time. You know, so that was, it was very good that he played 10 years and got to go out healthy. We don't see a lot of guys playing 10 years and get to go out as healthy as Barry, especially a running back.
Earl, just to get to go out on your own terms.
Sure.
You know, the game kind of almost dictates to all us when we have to leave it. And, you know, for Barry to be able to leave it when he wanted to on top of the game, you know, you can't write a story any better than that. And you're right. And, you know, for people to be upset about that, you know, that man gave this organization 10 years of, you know, 10 of the best years of his life.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when I went to his Hall of Fame induction, I remember Barry said it, and he said it right. He said, I didn't choose to play football. Football chose me. And he's right about that. I mean, if you think about that, man, this man played and averaged 1,500 yards a season for 10 years, you know, just with class and the way he did everything. He was never in trouble. He was never nobody you had to worry about. Barry was always on time. He was every place he needed to be. He was like the perfect teammate and the perfect player, man. So, you know, I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad NFL, the films did that tribute to him.
Yeah, it was very well done and very good. And as we know, knowing Barry for years, and you were even closer, he was just, like you say, he's a special person. And, you know, he did everything the right way.
Yes. Yes, he did. You're right. He did. And that's the way you're supposed to do it. I mean, from handing the ball to the referee, to his comments, to never throwing any of his linemen under the bus like you see some of these backs do. There's just so much that's different about him than what you see nowadays. So it's refreshing.
It is. Well, what's going on with the Lions? Because, you know, they've lost five in a row. They lose all these close games. Is it just that the other teams are more prepared for them, come more ready to play the Lions these days?
Well, I mean, you know, I said that, Earl, before the season started, I said that the Lions needed to play like they had a bullseye on their back because, you know, last year they were 10-6. They got in the playoffs. I think they snuck up on some teams last year. But coming into this season, everyone knew the talent that the Lions had, knew how dangerous and how good the Lions could be in 2012. And, you know, I think for us to be the worst team in the first three quarters of the game and the best team in the last quarter of the game, you know, it doesn't show a sense of urgency. And that's what we needed to play like. And the reason why I'm saying that is because all the teams, how evenly matched teams are nowadays, you know, if you get behind the team, man, it's hard to catch up and beat teams, you know, on a consistent basis. And, you know, you don't need to put yourself in that position, so that's why I thought it was important for them to be a lot better, you know, early in the games, to build a lead, to be able to play with a lead, because that's how their defense is. Their defense is built actually to play with a lead, you know, where they could get after the guys with that front four, and they don't have to blitz. They could drop guys back in coverage and be able to take care of the secondary. But, you know, when you're playing from behind, you know, you have to blitz. You have to get pressure on the opposing team. You have to get that team off the field. You have to do what you can to kind of shake it up or to stir something up or to try to cause a turnover. And that's when teams get you, especially good teams. And you can see that has happened to us all year long.
Yes, and that's been disappointing. But for the Lions, you know, so what do you think is you know, yes, they haven't been able to do much or get along, but do you think this team, you know, they still have four games left. Are they good enough to win these last few games?
I tell you what, it's going to be tough. I mean, you're talking about Chicago, who's going to be desperate. Maybe Atlanta might be, you know, resting their guys. They should have things wrapped up. They may not go as hard. But who's the next game they got?
Arizona's next.
Arizona. You know, their team kind of similar to the Lions. What they've lost, what, 9 in a row?
Yep.
And you know, the Lions have lost 5 in a row. And I bet they desperately want to get off the slide. And you got the Lions wanting to get off the slide. So, you know, you're going to have two, at least, you know, at least these last two games, you're going to have teams coming in here fighting for it. And maybe even Atlanta. Atlanta might take the attitude that they want the game and they need it. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough unless you execute, you know, especially at this time in the year, you know, where teams are pretty much have their identity. They know who they are. You know, it's the teams are tuning up, getting ready for the playoffs, you know, different things like that. You know, you have to bring your A game and you have to execute. And if the Lions don't do it, it's going to be tough to win those games.
Yes. This is a time of year. Like they always say, everybody's hurt this time. It seems like everybody has a great deal of injuries. And I guess if you can play over those injuries, you can win. It looks like the Lions are one of these teams that have a lot of injuries at this time.
Yeah, and I mean, Earl, you know, if you look at it, you're playing for next year. Mm-hmm. You know, how those guys in that locker room have to look at it is you're playing for next year. For A, you want to be a spoiler. You want to try to play spoiler. But B, you putting your film out there. You're auditioning either for the Lions next year or whatever other team. But you're putting your resume out there. So you have to play at your top level. So, you know, you can't take it off. You can't say the season's over with and that's it. I mean, you know, mathematically you're out of it, but you're a professional, you're a football player, you got those games left on your schedule, you expected to go out there and play as hard as you can, and like I say, play to try to win those games.
Yes, now, how much do you think that the Lions, it looks like they haven't had that many good drafts, like from the second round down in these last 3 to 4 years. They've done a great job at the top of the draft, but boy, they don't seem to get much out of anything from going from 2 through 7 in these last like 3 or 4 drafts.
Yeah, and that's tough too, Earl, because we used to have a saying, it's not about the first 22, meaning your starting 11 on offense and your starting 11 on defense. It's about those other guys that fill in. Because those guys have to be able to step in and kind of and try to keep the level of play at a certain level. You know, you can't have a significant fall off if you have an injury and you have to put a backup in there. You have to be able to count on that guy to go in there and at least be able to, you know, uphill his. You may not expect them to play at the level of the guy that he's replacing, but you have to expect this guy to play at a professional level. And that's where your backups come in to play at. And you're right, we have so many injuries, but it's like the old saying, the next guy up. You got to step up. This your opportunity, you know, and guys have to seize the moment.
Do you see guys, is their attitude changing? Because, you know, in this latest CBA they got, all the salaries seem to be going down a little bit. So do you see guys being a little upset because they're not making the money they used to make?
Man, Earl, they better not be. Man, I came in 1985. I wish one of them guys would cry to me. I don't care if you make it minimal in the NFL. I came in, minimal is about $300,000. My first, I was the sixth pick in the whole draft in 1985. My whole contract was 4 years, $1.75 million. You know, my first year I made $75,000. So, you know, guys can't complain. I don't care if you're not making the top-notch money. You can't complain about what you're making nowadays, especially if you're living in the real world and living in this economy. You need to appreciate it and go out and try to work your hardest to try to make more because you have opportunities. Just think about a person that's stuck in a 9-to-5 that don't have an opportunity to advance themselves. in the NFL, you get an opportunity every Sunday to go out there and to put yourself, like I say, put your resume out there to advance yourself, to help your family, to try to make more money. You know, and this game, and while you're playing this game, this game is going to afford you to meet people in high places that may give you an opportunity after you're out of the game. So to me, no. I mean, it's all benefit. I don't see no negative about being in the NFL. It's all a plus.
Yeah. Now, as you know, there was that 30-30 on ESPN broke about so many athletes who made bad investments and poor investments. I know you probably saw a lot of the guys that you know. I saw a few guys that I know very well in there. You know, it's very tragic. So many guys just had bad advice or just corrupted their own money. They did it without any help. They messed it up, but some did have some very bad advice.
Yeah, Earl. I mean, and it happens. I've had a lot of bad advice investments. You know, and you're right about that. And you know, it's sad because our career is so short. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 3.4 years, I think they say, the average career in the NFL. So it's so short. So the money that you make, even though you may be able to make a lot of it, you don't have a lot of time to make that money. And a lot of times, you know, we spend it like we're invincible, like we're going to play forever, like we're going to last forever. And like I say, it's just one injury, and it could be over with in the NFL. So yeah, you're right. It is sad about that. The NFL, I know they're doing a great job with the rookies, with the symposiums and all the other things that they have in place for these guys. I think the NFL is doing a great job, or starting to do a great job, with the exit program. You know, starting to provide things and advice for players that are coming out the game. You know, and the thing we have to do is just keep educating them while they're in the game too. So, you know, it's an overall process. I think it has to start earlier than when you get in the pros, you know, maybe in high school or college. But, hey, hopefully, you know, guys will see something like that episode broke, and it'll help them.
Yes, I hope it does, because they certainly should. So many guys need to view this and then check it out and just check out everything that's around them. Check, you know, just, you know, check out all the people that are working for them or they have working, because, you know, you just never know. You know, I know the biggest thing is, who do you trust as a player? You're coming in the league. You may not know that many people. So who do you trust? And you definitely got to figure out who to trust, who's the people that you want to trust and rely on helping you manage your money.
Yeah, I mean, as a football player, you're right. You want to have that sense of trust, because you don't want to be thinking about that. Your total focus should be on the season, the game, the opponent, whatever, you know, getting better, whatever you have to do as a ball player, because you know what you do on that field, that's going to create more money in that bank account for you to have and for you to be able to invest. So you're right. You have to find somebody you can trust. You can put it in the hands of them, and you won't have to, and try not to worry about it.
Well, when we talk about the Lions and this team, they've got off to good starts, but we know I guess they just don't have the depth, do they? I mean, they don't have any depth, obviously, in the receiver. They're really down on the receivers now, and is it hard to build depth in the NFL?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I mean, without a doubt, and I think that's the reason why you're seeing a Martin Mayhew and them go after Ryan Broyles. You know, in the second, and then when they drafted him, instead of maybe looking at a defensive back or looking at somebody on the defensive side of the ball, because they probably figured they were going to need depth there. You know, you could never count on injuries, man. And I think the biggest injury this year has been to Nate Burleson. Hands down,
yeah.
He's the emotional leader, to me, of the team. you know, Nate is the cog that kind of makes that machine go. And I think that's the reason why Calvin, even though he's having a phenomenal season, you know, he probably would have had a lot more touchdown catches and probably been on pace to set that record where nobody can get it at if Nate would have been there and stuff. So, you know, injuries, you're right. And you don't go into a season, you know, saying, oh, we're going to lose this player, this player, and this player.
Right.
You never know where they're going to happen at. So, again, that's why we always said it's not about the first 22. It's about those second, those other guys that come in.
Yeah, we know that special teams is such a key part of the NFL, and it seems they're even getting more play now, those special teams players. And a lot of times, because a lot of that first 22 don't get to play special teams, but they're getting more and more players that are really good enough to be starters on special teams, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as long as we have it, I can't believe they're talking about possibly getting rid of kickoffs and, you know, just getting rid of that altogether. But, yeah, Earl, I mean, you know, that like you hit on earlier, that was a big problem for the Lions because, you know, we had so many injuries to our starters that our backups were playing and placing them, and they were trying to, and they were having to play on special teams too. And remember that stretch in the season where we had like back-to-back horrible games of special teams play. But a lot of that was because of the depth. They didn't have the depth. And then I think they did. I think the Lions decided to put some starters over there to solidify special teams, and it worked. I mean, the special teams took a 180-degree turn from those couple of games that were pretty bad. Yeah, I mean, special teams is important, Earl. It's very important to a game.
Okay, we got a caller for you on the line. We got Kirk on the line. Kirk, how you doing?
Not too bad, Earl.
Good.
Okay, Wallace, I got a question for you that's pertinent to the state of Michigan today. In the state of Michigan, they're taking a vote today on right to work. So if you're in the locker room with a bunch of guys and players don't have to be part of the NFLPA, they don't have to pay dues to the Players Association, because it's a right-to-work state, how does that affect the locker room? And I'll take the call off the air. Thanks.
That's a very good question. And I think it could cause problems. I mean, I remember when the late Gene Upshaw used to come in the locker room as part of our CBA, you know, the NFLPA, and there used to be an uproar then, and we were a union. You know, half of the guys didn't understand why we had to be in the union and pay dues. Half of the guys didn't understand what the union was doing for us. I mean, it was crazy. It was always some conflict going on in there. The guys started questioning the amount of money Gene made, and you know, it just opened up a can, you know, just a whole bunch of stuff. And I could see that. I could see if it becomes that, you know, you can see little things where some guys may be paying and some guys, you know, may not. And I could see that. That was a very good question. Yeah, that was a very good question.
And, hey, Lomas, hey, I want to thank you for being with me. You know, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And, yeah, we'll get together again, of course, and talk some more football and some more Lions football. But, yeah, it's a tough year for the Lions. But I guess now we just have to hope they can bounce back next year. That's about all that's left, isn't it?
Yeah, that is it, Earl. We get tired of saying that, but that's all we got to look forward to right now is next year.
Yeah, and the draft coming up.
Yeah.
Okay, Lois. Hey, thanks for being with me, my friend, and I'll talk with you a little bit later on.
Hey, thanks a lot, Earl. Take care.
Okay, take care, Lomas. Yep.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Lomas Brown, former offensive lineman, the former All-Star with the Detroit Lions and also with Tampa Bay. Lomas Brown talking sports with us right here on AM 870. 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
For too long, says Tom Ricks, the military has refused to measure its generals by the one yardstick that matters, success.
Until we hold our generals accountable for being effective, that we won't see much change in the way our military is led.
I'm Neil Conan, one of this year's Books We Missed. The Generals, Tom Ricks joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
It's good to have you with us. I'm Scott Pohl. Here's the weather. A high today of 36 degrees and becoming mostly sunny. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 25. Wednesday will start partly sunny and then become mostly sunny with a high of 35. Sunny and a high of 41 Thursday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And you know, Aaron, I think we got to give away a pair of tickets this way because I think there's a game coming up against Ferris State coming up this weekend. I believe that's on the 15th. So take a few tickets, fake a few callers at 884-4783. That's 884-4783. Let's go to the phones and talk with our good buddy Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press. Talk about those Lions. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Earl. How you been?
Okay. Hey, it's been a tough year for you with the Lions. I mean, they've took some unexpected turns. We thought this would be a little bit better team. And they've just seemed to have had too many injuries. I think that's been probably the biggest problem, just too many injuries this year.
Well, I think the injuries have played a part. I mean, I think you can look all the way back to the offseason and the fact that maybe they didn't, make the necessary moves they needed to shore some of that up. I mean, you know, the Lions obviously were counting on Lewis Delmas to play a big role and Javid Best to play a big role. And, you know, I think those are areas that they probably should have. The signs were there that those guys were going to be hurt. You know, that had been a part of both of their histories, and the Lions didn't do anything to protect themselves in case of the inevitable. And now they find themselves lacking when Delmas is out most of the year with a knee injury, when Best hasn't played because of concussion issues. So I think injuries have played a part, but I think a lot of that traces back to the offseason too.
Yeah. Do you think that Best might come back, or is it you think his career is basically done?
He still wants to play, but I'd be pretty surprised if he came back at this point. He hasn't played in, 14 months, basically. And, the fact that he couldn't get cleared to come back, even though the Lions hoped that he would back in July, back in, October, I think the writing's pretty much on the wall when it comes to that.
Yeah, and what about the players? They had their new collective bargaining agreement, and actually, as you know, they didn't have to work out as much. How much do you think that's had an impact? Because they're not doing that much hitting in preseason and stuff. How much do you think that had an impact on the season?
On the season for the Lions?
Yeah, the Lions in the league, because they didn't do much hitting, so I assume that had probably a pretty significant impact, didn't it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think every team's, playing under the same rules, so it's not an excuse the Lions can be making for why they're 4-9. In some ways, it's probably helped preserve guys' bodies a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest benefit of that.
Yeah, hopefully, that's the good thing. Hopefully that did help preserve them and preserve the Lions, and at least it helped them get a little bit more through the season. With 4-9, which was unexpected, a lot of people thought they would be 9-4 at this point, or at least 8-5, something like that. But boy, it's totally been the difference. Why do you think the Lions just haven't been able to get it done this year?
That's a million-dollar question, and I think you can point, blame in a lot of different directions. I mean, you go back to the beginning of the season and the slow starts and the special teams mistakes, and, lately it's been some, defensive letdowns late in games. I think, to me, the biggest things have been, like I said, going back to the off season, maybe being a little too content with the roster when you have 21 and 22 starters coming back. I think Maybe there was a sense of comfort there that shouldn't have been, and you know, especially when you consider that the Lions, you know, they needed all those comebacks to win some of those games a season ago, and didn't beat a team with a winning record. And then, you know, two, I think, you know, players sharing the blame, and you know, Matthew Stafford for that matter. I mean, he hasn't made the strides a lot of people expected as a fourth-year quarterback.
Yeah, he's been a little bit surprising on some of the miscues that he's made this year. Are you a little bit surprised that Matthew's probably took a step backwards? Not a big step, but it seemed like he took a small step or two backwards.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, maybe it's, I think what we're looking at with the Lions is maybe a little bit like what happened to Tampa Bay last year. You know, mm-hmm. Josh Freeman didn't have a good year, and he came back, and he's been much better this year, and it's the reason the Buccaneers are in the playoff mix. And I think that's what you'll see with Stafford, you know, when he's able to take a step back from the season and maybe really hone in on one or two things. If it's a mechanical thing, if it's a certain throw, if it's, you know, working with, you know, somebody outside of his comfort zone who pushes him, you know, I think that's what you'll see him do this offseason and come back. And don't forget, you know, he's just 24, and I think he still has a bright future ahead of him.
Yes, and Megatron has had another good year. It started out a little shaky, of course, but boy, he's had another strong year, and it looks like he's going to break. We don't know if he's going to break it, but he's got a chance to break Jerry Rice's single season mark. And but he's really came back and had a pretty good year, because it didn't look like he was going to do all that at the beginning of the year, but and especially overcoming all the injuries he's had at the beginning of the year.
Well, not just the injuries to him, but the injuries to the rest of his receiving corps too. I mean, yes. Nate Burleson's gone down, Ryan Broyles has gone down. You know, Titus Young's been, you know, essentially banished from the team. So, you know, there's Brandon Pettigrew got hurt this past week. There aren't a whole lot of other people for Matthew Stafford to throw for. And the fact that, you know, Calvin is still going to at least chase Jerry Rice's record, maybe beat it, you know, says a lot about what sort of player he is and how dominant he is.
What was wrong? What happened with Titus Young? Why was he basically banned from the team? Was he just that belligerent or saying the wrong things? What happened with Titus Young?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was just a culmination of a bunch of different issues. You know, it all came to a head. Obviously, that Green Bay game at Ford Field when he was lining up in the wrong spot and mouthing off to his coach. And, you know, he's a guy who had been late to some meetings and just hadn't shown the dedication that he needed to. And, you know, I think probably felt a little too highly of his skills and thought things should be given to him because they hadn't, you know, a lot in a lot of his life, and that's just not the way it works in the NFL. You gotta wait your turn. You gotta prove yourself, and you know, he didn't do that here, and he wore out his welcome quickly with players and teammates. So I'd be surprised if he plays for the Lions again.
Yes, because as we know, you really do have to earn it. That's one thing about football. It's all about the production, and if you don't produce, you're going to be gone, aren't you?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the thing. You know, he hasn't had many great games. Look, he's a very talented player. We see him lay out, make some great catches across the middle. You know, he's a guy who can stretch the field, but he hasn't done it, you know, in 1.5 seasons, basically, because he hasn't played here the last couple weeks and he won't down the stretch. But in 1.5 seasons, he hadn't proved himself to be that elite sort of, you know, caliber receiver. And, you know, I think if there's it's a fact of life. When guys are the best in the business, when they perform at that high of a level, you know, you cut them a little bit more slack. You're able to overlook more of their problems, and Titus hadn't done that yet.
Yeah, now, what happens with the Lions and with the team? Because, you know, they're still trying to build it, and they haven't been able to get everybody on the same page, get them to line up and build a strong team and bench. So what happens now with the Lions? Because they just haven't been able to build a team. Will they have to address that? I know you mentioned that something about the draft. You mentioned that today in the paper. But what do the Lions have to do? I know they're probably going to try to continue to build through the draft, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they got, you know, what I wrote about today was all the huge decisions that the team is facing this offseason. You know, they have more than 20 free agents overall, but I mean, I think you look at, you know, the key guys, and it's, you know, essentially eight starters on defense, and I'm including, you know, Corey Williams in that mix, even though, you know, Nick Fairley has kind of taken over that role. But Corey Williams and Cliff Averill up front, you know, Justin Durant, DeAndre Levy at linebacker, their entire secondary, basically. So, you know, the Lions and all their specialists and right tackle guys are chairless. So the Lions are going to have a lot of decisions to make. And Earl, I think, you know, the point that I was making today is they have about $7 million in cap space as you look forward to 2013 right now. And that's just, you know, guessing that the cap will essentially be a flat cap. And, you know, that's not a lot of room to fill all those holes. I mean, there's a few guys' deals who they can restructure, maybe create some room. But, you know, they're going to have to go young at some positions, I do believe, in order to you know, keep themselves in a financial position to contend for the future. So, you know, they're going to have to hit it big in the draft, maybe re-sign some of these guys, you know, but they need some playmakers in the back end, and, you know, they need to shore that up really good, really quickly.
Yes, could that be a big problem for the Lions, shoring it up in the back end, especially as we've seen those corner? They need cornerbacks badly, no secret there. But actually, can they do? They need to really do well on the second day of the draft, doing well in that fourth, fifth, and sixth and seventh round. That's been a problem for them for many, many years. Even when I was going there, they had a problem drafting on the second day.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And, you know, Mel Kiper had a teleconference today, and he said this is not a good year, the top of the draft for cornerbacks and safeties. And I think if you're a Lions fan, you sort of cringe at that. They're picking seventh right now. And, you know, not that Mel knows everything about the draft, obviously, but, you know, his top cornerback is D. Milliner from Alabama, who he has 14th, I believe. And the Lions are not a team that reaches, you know, for position. So then if the Lions agree with that assessment, when all said and done, you know, they're going to be taking another defensive lineman maybe up top. And, you know, that they're going to still have the same questions in the back end. So, you know, and I think you're right. The third round, the fourth round, second round even, I mean, those are the areas where teams are built, where games are won. I think the Lions have done good at the top of the draft under Martin Mayhew. You know, you look at Stafford and Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley starting to come around. I still think, you know, Riley Reiff will be a pretty good player before it's all said and done. But, you know, they've struggled some after that. You know, Titus Young, they didn't look closely enough at his character issues, and now they might be looking for his replacement. Ryan Broyles has another injury here. Those are your last two second-round picks. Kelsher being there too, but, you know, who had an Achilles. I mean, third round, Derek Williams, you go back to Martin Mayhew's first draft, I think there's a lot of misses in those drafts, and I think that's where the Lions, you know, they really need to do a better job and hit on some of those picks going forward.
Yes, because, those picks, those later picks, that could be, those are killers when you miss, especially when you only have seven now, you know, and you miss in the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds. It can be a killer candidate, and the Lions just haven't done a good job of getting players to fill needs and feel that. You think that's a mistake for them to not, you know, they always say they just get the best player available and they don't draft for need. Do you think they should do more of drafting for need instead of just getting the best player?
Yeah, no, look, I think, you know, when Martin Mayhew says they don't draft for need, you know, what they do is they draft within their rankings. You know, if there's three guys that they have as, you know, these elite, you know, players who are left when they're on the board, they're going to take one of those three. But if one of those three fits a need, you know, they're going to lean toward that need first. Now they're not going to go outside of that tier to pick somebody. And, you know, I think there's merit to that. I mean, I think that's when you're looking long-term and you're trying to build a team, that's what you need to do. I mean, it's kind of like with Titus Young, you know, he was a great, you know, one of the top prospects at that time, but they didn't look at his character issues enough, and now they're going to have to draft his replacement. And that's sort of the philosophy with reaching for a player too, just based on talent. You know, if you take a cornerback who's not as highly rated as maybe somebody else on your board, well, then a year or 2 years later, you're still going to be looking to replace that player if he's not the caliber player that you need to fill that spot. So I think the Lions, you know, I think there comes a point in time when you need to maybe fill some specific holes when you're a player or two away from contending for a championship, but I'm not sure that the Lions are there quite yet.
Yes. Do you see the Lions as you know, like you said, with Martin Mayhew trying to draft more guys with character? Are they doing more character drafting? Because as you know and you pointed out, they've drafted some pretty poor characters in fairly high rounds in the last couple of drafts.
Yeah, and I think they started to go that way last year. You know, when they passed on Janoris Jenkins, who had a myriad of off field issues with, you know, drugs and women and, you know, behavioral things, that they went the safer route. You know, they, even though they had a huge need at cornerback, and Jenkins has proven to be a pretty good player this year in his rookie year, I think, you know, going with Riley Reiff, with Ryan Broyles, some guys that anything that they minor thing that they had in their past was long in the past, and they were generally considered to be, you know, good people, along with good players. I think that's the way that they started to go last year. I don't think you need a bunch of choir boys on your team. You know, I think you can get away with, you know, having a few questionable characters, but, you know, as the Lions proved last offseason, you know, too many of those can be poisonous. And I think, as it's proving now, you know, too many of those can be poisonous to a locker room.
Yes, because we've seen that, you know, they just haven't done well in getting and trying to get some of those. And I guess you just have to hope that maybe he'll stick more to getting some of the better character guys, as opposed to passing on them, because they've passed on a lot of guys. And it's funny, you know, Dave, that they passed on some of the good character guys and drafted some of these bad character guys who ended up really being bad characters. But, you know, when you draft a bad character, you think that I know every team thinks they can turn the guy around,
right?
But we know that.
Yeah, I think, and that's, you know, when I think that's why people take him. He'll be okay under me. He'll be able to follow me. You know, I'm a disciplinarian. I can make it happen. Well, you know, a lot of times you can, especially when you throw money in the mix. You know, if there's somebody who hasn't been motivated for whatever reason, or has been continuously been a discipline problem, you know, and you give them a boatload of money, and you put them out on their own, because that's what happens. You know, you get to the NFL, you know, this is the real world now. You know, these guys are their own men. You don't have somebody checking to see if you're in class every day. You know, a lot of times that backfires.
Yes, that's for sure. Well, as you know, Dave, you know, the game in Denison Fieldhouse will be coming up here at Michigan State. You know, that'll bring back a lot of memories, you know, for me, of course. I know you played over there a few times, but that's going to be a special game, you know, just bringing back a lot of memories here at Michigan State.
You know, Earl, I don't know what's going on over there. Honestly, I don't even know about it. I've been too wrapped up in the Lions. So.
Yeah, they're having a game, the game of change, because this was one of the first places where integration came from back in the 60s, and they're going to have that game, a memorial game, this weekend. It should be a very special game. They're going to play Tuskegee here, the Airmen, Loyola and Michigan State played back in the 60s here when Loyola won their championship.
Yeah, no, that's a good gesture by Mark Hollis and Tom Izzo and everyone. I remember being up at Jenison and, you know, having some fun playing some rec league ball over there. And so it's got some good memories for me. But, yeah, like I said, Earl, this time of year, you know, I'm Lions about 100% of the time. So if it ain't happening on the field with these guys, I don't really know too much about it.
Well, other than with the draft coming up shortly, what do you see the Lions taking? What, they'll probably be around the seventh pick this year?
Well, that's where they're at right now. They're seven, if that was today. And, you know, obviously this is this game this weekend against Arizona is a game that'll have some significant draft implications, because the Cardinals are, you know, 4-9-2 and they've lost 9 straight. And, you know, ties are based on strength of schedule. So if the Lions lose this, you know, maybe they're looking at a top 5 pick. I mean, you play Atlanta and Chicago to close the season. Neither one of those is going to be easy. But, you know, they win this, maybe they can get another one. Maybe they get outside of that top 10. And more importantly, I think that, you know, from a mental standpoint for the guys in the locker room, looking forward to next year, I think that would do the team wonders.
Yeah. Do you think that they might take a linebacker? I mean, just for example, if Tao should fall to them, if he's around, would that be a good pick for them, or should they basically almost go for a cornerback?
A lot of the stuff is going to depend on who they re-sign this offseason with all those free agents. But, you know, just kind of looking at the Lions' needs right now, I don't think linebacker, even though they got 2 free agents there, I don't think linebacker is one of them. And I'm not sure, you know, I think they need... to me, I think defensive end, I think cornerback, I think safety, I think those are your biggest needs right now. And I'm not sure Tao is, you know, he might be a 2-down player to start his career. And, And the fact that the Lions gave Steven Pelech 5 years last year on his extension, I'm not sure that Taya would be a great fit right now. I think there's some pass rushers, DeMontre Moore from Texas A&M, and Barkevious Mingo from LSU. I think those are a couple guys that I'd be looking at if the Lions were in that kind of, you know, 6, 7, 8 range.
Okay. Hey, Dave, I want to thank you for being with me. You know, always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll get it together maybe once more before the season ends. We'll see. But, hey, thanks a lot for being with me, Dave. And it's always good talking with you, buddy.
Sounds good, Earl. You too. I'll talk to you again.
Yep. Okay. Bye-bye. And that's Dave Burkett with the Detroit Free Press. I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR, East Lansing. Have a safe and pleasant evening.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870, WKAR.